all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800. Our guest today is Professor Nancy Sherman. She is a professor of philosophy at Georgetown University. She obtained her PhD from Harvard University in philosophy, and she's spent an amazing amount of her professional career. Maybe this is because she's the daughter of a World War II vet, working in the area of military and veteran issues. She was the inaugural holder of the Distinguished Chair in Ethics at the United States Naval Academy. She's written over 50 articles, published articles in this area of ethics and history of moral philosophy, ancient philosophy, and military ethics. And she also had an interesting assignment in October of 2005 at the invitation of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs to visit Guantanamo Bay Detention Center to observe and advise on medical and psychological conditions of detainees in matters of medical ethics. Professor Sherman, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much, Jim. It's lovely being here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you have written most recently a book called After War, Healing the Moral Wounds of Our Soldiers, but you've also written The Untold War, Inside the Hearts, Minds, and Souls of Our Soldiers. That was in 2010. And you also wrote Stoic Warriors, The Ancient Philosophy Behind the Military Mind, back in 2005. Some of these issues we're talking about in terms of the moral injury and the things that our soldiers think about, they go back. This is human nature. It goes back to ancient times, doesn't it, Professor?
Well, that's right. The moral anguish of war, both whether you think the war is right and what you do in war, how you prosecute it, and how you exit the war arena, are old, old, ancient issues. Homer, the Greek epic writer, or at least oral bard, wrote about this, and he wrote about friendships, battle buddies, Achilles and Patroclus, and he wrote about having your honor snatched, as when Achilles takes Agamemnon's war bride, and vice versa. These are old issues about what happens when you feel betrayed on the battlefield or unable to really be competent. Sophocles, we forget, also was one of the not only most prominent tragedian, but a general, and he wrote homecoming plays like Ajax and Philoctetes about what it means for command to betray you, or to, in the case of Philoctetes, to maroon you on an island alone called Lesbos in the news these days, because you have a wound and you're not really ready for the battleship anymore. So these things go back, and it's not just feeling rattled by artillery or by sniper shots or by the unpredictability of the rain of fire, which is often how we think about PTSD, just sort of having war nerves. It's also about you can't figure out if you're being treated well, or you're doing your best, or you're falling from expectations, and you're no longer good inside or a decent person as a result of what happened in war and what you did in war and what you saw in war. Those are old issues.
And, yeah, these aren't issues that just professors of dusty ancient history look at. These are problems with today's GI looks at, and I see from some of the forewords and some of the others who've commented about your books, these are things that actually our generals and our military thinks about as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was very fortunate enough in after war to have General Dubik, a 3-star Army executive, write the forward, and he himself came home from a career of service to think more about issues of just war and how it's not just generals who go to war, but it's civilians in command as well who go to war and support a war and resource a war, and on whom those who are doing war depend, as well as, of course, the citizenry that is supporting the citizen soldier. We don't have militias, though the corporate warrior is a different category. So yeah, these are old, and also the very issue that I often write about is the stoic aspect of being a warrior. When I taught at the Naval Academy, there was no philosophy that resonated more than stoicism, because you can suck it up and tough it out. That's what you have to do, and that's what you're expected to do. And Admiral Jim Stockdale was a folk hero, an icon of sorts. He was a senior POW in the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam, which shot down early in the war. And he said he was leaving behind the world of technology and entering the world of Epictetus, who was a Stoic philosopher. And by that he meant he had to take charge of his life and be in control of himself, even though he was being controlled by a prison guard whose name was Cat Eye. And even though he was in prison irons for leg irons for two and a half years, and in solitary, he still had to sort of carve out some area where he could be in charge and say, this is what I can take, and this is what you can do to me. And I somehow can't feel ultimate shame for what you do to me, where I'm not in any sense in charge. And that's that appealed very much to my students, to my officers who had come home from the first Gulf War, and to those who were telling, you know, had to sort of live and believe in the Stoic armor. And I think the Stoic armor is a blessing, but also a curse, in that you think you're invincible, and of course we simply aren't. And acknowledging the vulnerabilities that come with trying to accomplish a mission on few resources with in population-centric warfare is critical. So I try to expose the seamy side of being a Stoic as well as the glorious side.
And listeners, we're talking to Professor Nancy Sherman. Dr. Sherman is at Georgetown University, is a professor of philosophy. And you wrote Stoic Warriors, The Ancient Philosophy Behind the Military Mind. That Stoicism gives you armor in battle, I suppose. What do ancient times tell us about how that Stoic warrior reintegrates back into society when the battle is done?
Well, that's a great question. The Stoics themselves somehow wanted us to be able to make ourselves real masters of our, you know, captains of our own ship, and minimize the effects of injury and of loss and grief. And they had really great models. You know, the people who were attracted to it were folks like Cicero, Seneca, who was the speechwriter and advisor for Nero. I mean, these were not schlubs. These were eminent statespersons, right? And also Marcus Aurelius, an emperor, so who led people to battle, but then at night wrote quiet meditations on the shores of the Danube. He was a real philosopher warrior. And I think the lessons taught, if you're really honest with someone like Seneca, who's one of the most honest, is that you're going to suffer too, and that you have to acknowledge and make room in your heart for grieving and find a place for grieving and appropriate tears. And that's something many had told me as generals and admirals, you know, maybe I don't show my tears right here and then, but my troops have to know that I care, and they have to feel through me or through the head NCO that we're in it together and that we're not superhuman and that the losses have to register. And I think some of that feeling, as we look at the shift in history from Vietnam to the current war, is about when we have our grieving, when we have make time for collective grieving, how we go through the rituals of loss, how we include suicides in the rituals of loss, how we think about commanders, as I had a SEAL who came into my office recently whose commander committed suicide, and there was a lot of difficulty amongst those about how to view this commander. He's written up in the New York Times recently. This man named, his last name is Job. Those issues have to be talked about openly. And I think the Stoic, the impression of Stoicism is that you're tough and tough and tough and you never have cracks in the armor is wrong. And the best Stoics, I think, realize that you have to acknowledge the humanity of our condition in war and when you've got to be the tough guy in war.
So this is a great discussion. I don't think I've ever mentioned this on Veterans Radio before. Marcus Aurelius and his meditations were something which I read on ship when I was in the service, and I recommend it to anybody. Again, it may seem sort of old and dusty, but you will find a lot of it is just wisdom from the ages that is as relevant today as it was when it was written. I don't want to turn it into a Greek philosophy course.
No, but you know,
I thought I'd never say this on Veterans Radio. I can't believe you brought it up.
Well, Epictetus was this little skinny book that my students adore called The Handbook, and my midshipmen and cadets that I teach at West Point all think it's amazing. That little book was given to Jim Stockdale, Admiral Stockdale, and he was I'm not sure what he was, a lieutenant at the time or a commander. He was studying at Stanford after some mid-career courses and decided international relations really wasn't so interesting, but philosophy was more interesting. So he was handed this book, and he said to himself, and I interviewed him a few times before he died, I was at Coronado. He said, you know, what is a martini drinking, golf playing aviator need with a book like that? But he then told me he proceeded to memorize it in his wardroom at Ticonderoga, and sure enough, in whatever it was, 1967-68, when he was shot down, it was his mantra. It became his Bible. And when he spoke to me, he had most of it memorized still, in his late 70s or however old he was, and he could recite it almost seamlessly. You know, I wasn't sure who I was listening to, Epictetus or Stockdale. So it had real appeal, and it became the backbone of his chain, of his being the head of the chain of command.
Well, we're talking to Professor Nancy Sherman. She's a professor of philosophy at Georgetown University, has written on a number of books related to ethics and military affairs. Nancy, let me get your take on, in the world that is now facing not nation against nation fighting or even tribe against tribe, but this terrorism, how do you see that layering in to your areas of study about military ethics and the moral wounds of our soldiers? Have you thought about that? Have you had the opportunity to write on that?
Well, I've had the pleasure of advising students, one of whom is an Army colonel and who now serves as a defense attachment to Secretary of State Kerry. And he wrote quite a lot on both counterterrorism and counterinsurgency. I think I've had hands-on experience with those who've been in the field, those who are training Iraqi and Afghani police and setting up policy as well for American troops, and even helping Petraeus and write the counterinsurgency manual that came out in 2005. Yes, I've thought about this a lot. Let's just talk about counterinsurgency for all. Population-centric warfare is very hard on troops because troops are both doing peacekeeping as well as policing and war fighting and trying to figure out exactly which when. And the burden, if there's a trifecta out there, of moving risk off your troops and off the mission so you can get the mission accomplished, and also certainly off civilians so that you discriminate and keep them safe, you can't win on all fronts. If the highest priority is civilian safety, then your troops are going to take it, and the mission gets the mission of larger goals get compromised to some degree. And I think that's very, very hard on troops, especially those that are not well disciplined, where the command climate isn't great, where the command leadership isn't great, and where understanding what the point of trying to neutralize the civilian population is about, and what might be the advantages, and also the long-term benefits. Many are ultimately skeptical of being able to do good counterinsurgency. Maybe we now think, it takes long-term investment of troops, and it gets harder and harder the longer those populations have been at war, continue to be at war, and are themselves traumatized populations. And, of course, as the insurgents morph into hydra-headed beasts that keep appearing in different ways and shapes and forms. So I don't think we have a good answer to this one, and I think there's good reason for us to be cautious about the moral hazards and moral injuries that we expose our troops to when we try to do missions that are extremely hard. Drones have their own problem. They may give you safety and a certain kind of security for your troops, but they also are very easy to use, and even if they're just a kind of discriminate force, they may be used indiscriminately so that their precision gets muted by the ease by which we use them.
We've had some drone commanders on, and they like to call it remote piloted aircraft,
exactly.
Professor Sherman, as you know. But it's interesting, they had an observation about their moral dilemma with this because of the high-resolution cameras, and how long the RPAs can circle over an area of interest, and how long they might observe a target.
That's right. I think they're exposed in a way we don't appreciate. We think because it's mediated by either the distance or a screen that it's somehow less traumatizing, but they are exposed to before event and after event and follow up in a way that few realize, with very, very long shifts as well. I've talked to some pilots, and they're often 12-hour shifts with a lot of intimate detail at funerals and gatherings afterwards that are part of the intelligence collecting, but also make it very deeply exposed. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
So
it's
I don't
a cause
think
of
your
moral injury as well.
Yeah, I don't think your area of interest and study is going away anytime soon. I think you'll be applying these same moral questions and philosophies just to different set of circumstances, unfortunately.
I think that's right. I think and we also have to use our creative ken to think about to make sure that we're putting in the equation not just the physical injuries of forces, but the psychological and moral injuries of the forces and those who support them and the societies to which they return.
So, listeners, we're talking to Professor Nancy Sherman. She's an author, writing in the area of military ethics and moral philosophy. Nancy, can you tell our listeners how they can find out more about what you're doing and how they might be able to track down some of the books and articles that you've written on these topics?
Absolutely. I'm www.nancysherman.com, and it's a fairly complete webpage there with links to the books and to some of my appearances and panels and shorter pieces, but the books, most recent book, After War, and the book before that, Untold War, and the first in the trilogy, you might say, Stoic Warriors, are all available online and through Amazon.
Well, that's great. I encourage folks to go out and learn more about the writings of Nancy Sherman. Because you mentioned it as a trilogy, I guess I have to ask, is there anything else coming? Do you have another one in the work that follows up on these?
That's good. I'm not sure it's a quartet yet. No. at the moment, I'm turning my horizons to other kinds of thoughts. So nothing quite in the works at the moment. But after war continues to have an afterlife, you might say. So I continue to think about it long and hard.
Well, thank you for adding to the depth of literature in this area. And I'd encourage our friends and family members of veterans to, if you want to think a little deeper about these issues that may help you understand your friends and family members, certainly look up the work that Professor Nancy Sherman has done on this. And I want to thank you, Nancy, for being available to be interviewed here on Veterans Radio today.
Thank you very much, Jim, for your thoughtful questions. I enjoyed it.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to podcasts and internet radio shows by going to www.veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.